This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. It's tape number 329, June 16th, 1978, side 2. On side 1, I talked about Reinhard Gehlen, chief of Hitler's intelligence, taking his agents, his Nazi agents, into Egypt with Mr. Nasser, overthrowing King Farouk and setting up Nazis, at least 50 that they admitted, and many, many more besides, from Latin America and South America that escaped prosecution at the time of the Nuremberg trials, and putting them into Egypt. And I mentioned also that in 1948, the Nazis began to move into Egypt 2 months after Israel became a country in July of 1948. And the important thing about studying this past history and reading these books, the kind that I have in my library that you can get at libraries and bookstores and so forth, is that you cannot understand the present headlines, you cannot understand the news of today, or predict tomorrow unless you study the past. The past is gone with all of its blunders and mistakes, but only through reading and studying and putting aside a lot of the frills and entertainment can you sit down and concentrate to put these pieces together. Jack Anderson had an article in the paper this week, a syndicated column, which goes into the rearming of Saudi Arabia. One of the countries mentioned is the recipient of Adolf Hitler's agents. And it tells how Mark Siegel, President Carter's liaison advisor on Jewish affairs, recently left his work with the White House because of the decision to send F-15s to Saudi Arabia. At the time, the defense argument for sending them there was that they were defense airplanes, that they needed them to defend themselves probably against Israel attacking Saudi Arabia and so forth. Now it seems that the report of the purposes of the F-15s and the nature of them has been concealed. The party who claimed that they were defensive weapons said that she never really implicated that that's all that they were used for. They also had said originally that Tabuk, the airport where these F-15s would remain, was a civilian airfield, and now it seems that it's much more than a civilian airfield. The airfield is being upgraded for not only for the F-15s, but for airplanes that are very dangerous to the security of Israel. Tabuk Airport, in quotes, is heavily protected by American Hawk anti-aircraft missiles, and the Hawk triads are currently being installed. The United States is helping the Saudis to construct them. There's a modern paratroop training installation there, and there'll be barracks for them and for several thousand paratroopers. Jack Anderson said that McDonnell Douglas, who makes the F-15, said it is a potent and legal strike airplane as well as an air superior interceptor. So while President Carter talks about human rights and decency in the political field and covers up his selling of airplanes, it all boils down to the fact that Saudi Arabia and Egypt and the Nazi countries in Egypt as well as South America are combining their agents and their talents and are full-scale intent on wiping out Israel. And in exchange, we'll be able to get our oil probably at a decent price someday. They've as much as said that in recent statements. A man who's helped fight Nazis in America, and what I call the Nazification of America, is Sherman Skolnick in Chicago. Pardon me. I've given you his address and his telephone number. He's easily accessible. He's a brilliant, courageous person who has been separated from the bulk of the researchers, such as Mark Lane and Harold Weisberg, Sylvia Marr, the very people that protect the Nazis in the conspiratory aspects of the assassinations, particularly those, and who malign the other researchers who get into the field of Nazi and call them crazy and isolate them, have put Sherman Skolnick in the category of benign neglect. I get the same treatment from them, and I know why, and I wonder why they're protecting these Nazis unless these researchers are up front covering the real story, which I think is the real story of the assassination of John Kennedy. Kennedy's murder wasn't any different than replacing Farouk or Mossadegh in Iran, one in Egypt, one in America. As I began to study the assassination, I realized it was just a chain of commanders or head of states that had to be gotten rid of if they didn't go along with the game, the political game that we're getting into every day. Sherman has a list of books, a series of them, that you can send for the bibliographies. One is called Nazi War Criminals in America, The Secret Story, and he has listed about 20 excellent books that are available at the library, are still available if you want to order them or read them. He also has information on the fatal plane crash of Dorothy Hunt at the time of the Watergate, the bag woman. He had his agent, Alex Bottas, who happened to be at the airfield working for the Drug Enforcement Agency at the time, catching the little pieces of the conspiracy and then putting it together on how Dorothy Hunt was killed. And he's done excellent work on the Chicago riots in 1968. He's one of these people who has made allegations that Tom Hayden and Abby Hoffman and various persons involved were agent provocateurs that were set up and disguised for the new left in order to get these conspiracy laws that people couldn't go through the 50 states in order to assemble or protest against the government to try to keep you in your own state. A lot of the left don't like Sherman Skolnick because they say, how dare he say that about our leaders? But it is the left that's infiltrated. The right doesn't have to be because they're already sympathetic to the cause. And if you read Philip Agee's book, Inside the Company, it's the left labor parties, the left newspapers, or offices, or political organizations that you have to infiltrate and sabotage because there's no reason to waste your agents. You don't infiltrate the John Birch Society, you infiltrate the Yippie or Hippie Party. And he's been put aside and ignored by very good, otherwise good researchers because of the Nazi connections. So write to Sherman, and because of postage expenses and paper expenses, now send him anywhere from $1 to $2 for a bibliography or a printed sheet on the plane crash of Dorothy Hunt, the Nazis in America, and the Abraham Bolden story of the plans to kill John Kennedy in Chicago. That's another reason why I think Sherman is so much ignored by some of the very so-called researchers, Robert Sam Anson, who wrote They Killed the President, and many of the writers, the almanacs that have come out, have ignored him because he did this extensive work on the plans to kill John Kennedy in November of 1963 in Chicago, and we know there were plans to kill him in Miami the same month. And of all three of these attempts, the one that succeeded in Dallas and the other two were exposed, the links would go higher up and high up in government and not down to Fidel Castro or a handful of displaced anti-Castro Cubans who went out on a limb on their own and killed the president unbeknownst to the Attorney General, the FBI, the Dallas police. That story never will wash, and it's just all wrong. But the way you keep it going through all these various committees in Washington, D.C., is that you say it often enough and it becomes to sound like a truth. And the truth is that the Nazis have been behind this. Just as I gave you a list of books that I categorize in my library, I will be in another 2 weeks giving you a list of files and the way I cross-file my newspapers and the way I should, the subject categories, so that some of us who share these tapes may begin to put information in the same kind of an order. Sometimes people have a feeling about different subjects but don't know how or where to put it. So I will send out a printed sheet for you and discuss on the tapes way to save information, because once you have it, it's there. Once it's out of your hand, you can never go back and get it. It's very, very hard and time-consuming. So it's better to save more and not be quite sure of what you want now than to throw it out and look for it later. Sometime I would like to write a book on how to do research and put information together and save it, because the same principle applies to one type of investigative work as to many, many others. And once you catch the principle, you're on your way, and you can begin to put meaningful articles away for your children or for yourself or grandchildren or for me, or copy them and share them with other people who are specializing in those areas. And maybe we could build up a network of people who are observing what is going on, have nowhere to put it, but can share it with others. There's one woman I mentioned before, Marge Gibson, who lives in Minneapolis, who sent me two large packets of conspiracies in St. Paul and in Minneapolis and in the state, Minnesota. And they're filled with information. And what I have to do always is take it. It should be cross-filed. One, the Minneapolis connections, which she's put in envelopes, and the other is in the other sections of mysterious murders, people that got out of jail that should have been locked up, evidence of mind control, corruption in government, the new Hubert Humphrey a memorial group in that's being set up there, who's on the board of it. It looks like a CIA front. Who are the members? Where do they come from? What will the front be used for? Will it be like a Stanford Research, another CIA front in Minneapolis? We have to take this material and have a general system of classifying, which I can spend the time doing now. When the tapes were a half hour a week, it was very difficult to do this. Now that we have an extra half hour, we can go into organizing, and I will be doing that, and I also will get out the list of the books that I have under those major categories so that you can keep up with those. One of the most valuable books I have in my library under the category of American history that falls into that period, that Cold War period after World War II, the 1946 to 1950, is a book that you should have. It's called The Hoover Commission on Organization of the Executive Branch of Government. It was published by McGraw-Hill, and the date isn't on this, but it was published, it was currently in 1950, it was pertaining to 1950 and the passage of the National Security Act. The commission, this preceded the Warren Commission, was made up of Herbert Hoover, who only happened to have $2 billion in seven oil companies and minerals and various products in the Russia, Tsarist Russia before the communists took over. It was Herbert Hoover who took hundreds of millions of dollars of money that was supposed to go to Europe to food relief program and gave it to a white Russian Polish army to rearm, to get ready for a global war against the Soviet Union, to step up the war after World War I. And they did give us World War II and the Holocaust and the 80 million deaths and displaced persons. Dean Acheson was on this commission. This commission was ordered by President Truman to reorganize the executive branch of the government. And this is an important book because this is where we lost our Constitution and our control of decision-making policy. James K. Pollock was on the commission, John McClellan, Arthur S. Fleming. I don't know if he's related to Ian Fleming, whose grandfather was over here after the Civil War reconstructing the banks, whose father was a member of Parliament, extremely right, conservative member of Parliament, and then Ian Fleming, who worked with the OSS and formed our Central Intelligence Agency and the North American Newspaper Alliance, later had links with Lee Harvey Oswald and Priscilla Johnson. I don't know if Arthur S. Fleming is related to them, but I have to look that up. James Forrestal was on the commission and later was written up as one of the first tests, Hugh MacDonald said, of mind control at Bethesda Hospital, when he jumped out the window at Bethesda Hospital. And then Joseph P. Kennedy was on this commission, the Hoover Commission, on reorganizing the executive branch. Now, Joseph P. Kennedy was brought home as ambassador to England because, according to J. Edgar Hoover, they had tapes and recordings of him as being pro-Nazi, and they felt that he was too un-American to serve as the ambassador to England. And he also worked with Cardinal Cushing in Boston with the Cold War propaganda against Cardinal Benzenti in Hungary. He was always an instrument of the Cold War. He was very pro-Nazi, and it'd be interesting up in heaven or wherever they are for pro-Nazi Joe Kennedy to bump into John Kennedy, whose very agents, his father's very agents, had killed his son. But even the Nazis snitched on their parents or children as they felt that they weren't consistent with the main political system. Well, the Hoover Commission report was set up by none other than J. Edgar Hoover. And, of course, the year is interesting because the President of the United States was seduced into forming a new kind of government. As the preface said, it was necessary to reorganize the federal government, and agents were greatly excited, and there was much public interest. A commission was formed on organizing the executive branch of the government, reorganizing it. The executive branch of the government had never been reorganized until after World War II. And in speaking of common sense business, They attempted to solve, by their commissions and executive orders and legislation, problems that had to be turned over to a new group of people. Mr. Hoover set up this commission with a recommendation signed by Herbert Hoover, again, the man who had $2 billion in seven oil companies that were confiscated by the czarist. And he's going to set this up after the Nazi form of government that took place from the illegal rearming of Germany after Versailles Treaty and worked for Adolf Hitler until he was elected. Herbert Hoover said, 5th of February, 1949, Dear sir, this is to the President and the Senate and the House of Representatives, in accordance with Public Law 162, the 80th Congress approved on July the 7th, 1947, the Commission on Organization of the Executive Branch of the United States Government. It relates to the general management of the executive branch. And this was the organization that was to take away what our Constitution meant about the balance of power divided between the executive legislature and the Congress. The balance of power in the Constitution was soon to be taken away by this executive order of the National Security Council. Now, this letter was written February the 5th, 1949. Prior to World War II, when it broke out, Adolf Hitler was corresponding with Nazi Germany, high-top Nazis, until the day we were invaded by the Japanese at Pearl Harbor. And then he went on to become vice president of Interpol, that was originally founded by the Nazis. And in 1946 to 1950, Herbert Hoover was vice president of the dreaded Nazi organization that conducts its international affairs today, known as Interpol. They recommend to Congress that we should reorganize the executive branch of government. The policies of Congress, it is hereby declared to be the policy of Congress to promote economy and efficiency. Therefore, we must eliminate duplication and overlapping of services and activities. We must consolidate services and activities and functions of a similar nature. We must abolish services, activities, and functions. Services, activities, and functions not necessary to the efficient conduct of the government. We must define and limit executive functions and services and activities. The writing and the adoption of the federal constitution, this is what the Herbert Hoover commission said, proved that a republic could deliberately analyze its political institutions and redesign its government to meet the demands of the future. This is what it said, that the original Constitution allowed for them to do this. As I say, J. Edgar Hoover was vice president of Interpol, and Herbert Hoover was setting up the organization of the National Security Council. As a result of depression and the war and new needs for defense and our greater responsibilities in the foreign field, the federal government has become the most gigantic business on earth. In less than 20 years, their employees rose from 570,000 to 2,100,000. The commission has found that the United States is paying heavily for the lack of order, lack of clear lines of authority and responsibility, and lack of an effective organization in the executive branch. Much can be accomplished. Many of the most important things can probably be accomplished only if Congress reenacts and broadens the power to initiate reorganization plans which it previously granted to the President under an act which expired March 31, 1948. The Commission recommends that such authority be given to the President and that the power of the President to prepare and transmit plans of reorganization to Congress should not be restricted by limitations or exemptions. It does believe that the safeguard against unwise reorganization plans lies both in a sound exercise of the President's discretion and the reserved power of the Congress. By concurrent resolution, to disprove any proposed plan. Limitations or exemptions upon this power to reorganize should not be imposed other than that of congressional disapproval. And then the general management of the executive branch goes on in the introduction. The President and under him his chief lieutenants must be held responsible for the people, for the conduct of the executive branch. Responsibility and accountability are impossible without authority and power to direct. The exercise of authority is impossible without a clear line of command from the top to the bottom and a return line for responsibility and accountability. The wise exercise of authority is impossible without aids which staff institutions can provide. And these are the aids that the National Security Council begins to advise. The aids we get by forming the National Security Council as it exists today are the men that tell President Johnson that we are being bombed, the Tet Offensive, that our ships are being attacked, we have to escalate the war in Vietnam, information that practically all of Cuba has to be in Zaire fomenting the war, and yet this congressman saying to President Carter, prove what you are saying, and he says, I don't have to prove it to you, the CIA tells me. The National Security Council becomes the advisor and gives the orders from the top down, from them to the president to the Congress. And it's important to know that the laws for putting this into order by Herbert Hoover and J. Edgar Hoover and the proposed laws for redirecting the government were made after World War II, when the Nazification process became necessary, when the British Empire was being broken up, when our financial holdings in all these various countries could be jeopardized, and it was necessary to make a law which was described in detail. It's called the Hoover Commission Report, published by McGraw-Hill, and it goes into the formation of the National Security Council. And I think it's interesting that Herbert Hoover, that old dog who got us into trouble during the terrible Depression because he was sending these millions of dollars to the white Polish army, and it was all wasted except it was used for a network of spies later. I think it's important to follow how that National Security Council got started, because that was the beginning of the end of the American Constitution as I see it. I don't know how many of you read Midnight on the newsstands. I read it because I write for it, and they do a good job on my articles. They never cut anything out. They're very fair. June 20th, 1978 has an article which I thought was rather interesting. It has to do with various psychics, five psychics who went down to Miami with Malcolm Abrams. He's the gentleman that I work with my articles. And they were supposed or alleged to have talked to the ghost of Bing Crosby, John Kennedy, Marilyn Monroe, and Freddie Prinze. These are called messages and pleas from the grave, and Elvis Presley. And some of you may take it tongue-in-cheek, but there was an interesting item in there which caught my interest, and I just thought I'd pass it on to you. The person who was talking to Marilyn Monroe, this psychic, Valerie Morrison, and also Frankie Avery, were receiving messages. This is their story, and it's written up for Marilyn, that she had a diary, that there's a secret diary, and that they killed me, she said. They killed me, and she is desperate. She's supposed to be desperate, and she's talking about the injection which she got, which you don't have to know through a psychic. She did have a needle mark in her arm when she was found dead. But she said, whatever happened to my diary? Did you take it? Do you know where it is? It has never been found. Someone has it, and there is much written there about so many people that's shocking. Careers would be destroyed. And what did they do with my diary? Did it fall in the wrong hands? And she went on and later said they lied and lied about what happened. Now, that caught my eye because about, 16 months ago or so, a man came to me who had Marilyn Monroe's diary, and he was frantic. He was a good friend of hers, and he was with her just before she died. And she told him that she thought that a certain party, a man who's in Hollywood, who's a writer, who had a very close relationship to her, was going to kill her. She was deathly afraid of this person. He had helped her out early in her career, and he was hanging around. And she thought that she knew too much about what was going on in Hollywood, and that there were intimations that she could be killed. So she told him to keep this diary, and the man's name was in it. And he came up to Monterey. He was staying at the San Carlos Hotel. I had no way to protect him, or I didn't know which way then to turn with the diary, and I gave him the name of a well-known writer in New England who I trust. I have three or four of his books, and felt that maybe this would be the best place to be. Then when I went down to Hollywood last year to work on a book, I met this man that she was afraid of, and it was really a shock to me to find out that he had some association with the book that I was working on. And the man is armed, and he had a gun. He always carries a gun, and has close links to military intelligence and the Howard Hughes organization and a network of spies around the country, the kind that did or could or would want Marilyn dead. I haven't heard from him since. There are several or many people that have contacted me at various times, and I let the chance pass by. I was supposed to meet Saul in Canada. Hugh MacDonald wanted me to meet him. And, you know, a man called me who had done these 10 assassinations for the CIA and went out to do another job a year ago this September, and I haven't heard from him. I've had some interesting experiences that maybe I should have gotten closer to, but for whatever reason, instinctively or so forth, I didn't want to pass the buck, and I do go up over my neck on a lot of things anyway that maybe I shouldn't be saying or doing. But wherever I feel comfortable, I get into something, and if I feel threatened, I pull back. It doesn't matter how big the story. I called Malcolm at midnight and told him about the story. He said, find him. I mean, you could make a huge fortune, and Midnight and National Enquirer pay small fortunes for these kind of people and information. I guess I'm just too dumb to commercialize or make money off of this thing yet. I don't know how. I don't think I ever will. I play it instinctively, as I say. But there is this diary. I know it exists. I believe the man. And he was frantic. He had the same kind of frantic description that was described in the seance. And some of you may take it tongue-in-cheek and pass off these things. I never did believe in psychic experience or ghosts until my own daughter was killed. And then things happened in our own home that were deposited or rearranged and then came back and reappeared. And then I had to reevaluate my own feelings about what was happening just to me. And I don't know about you out there, but I've been very much tuned into following things ever since that, because they're still happening to us. And there is no explanation. This is called psychic phenomena because it is phenomena, and there's no way to categorize it. But there was that diary, and the man did come through, and if ever he comes again, we'll follow it through. I think I'm better prepared to handle that kind of material now, and we'll follow it through. One of the regular subscribers, longtime subscribers to my tapes, who sends me a lot of material that I've mentioned before from Minneapolis and St. Paul, also mails me many articles on the UFOs and magazines on UFOs. While we're talking about psychic experience, I can get into that briefly for one more minute here. I put on a reference book from the show May 26th, the book UFO Nazi Secret Weapon. And just to continue along those lines, as I say, we just have a minute. In the UFO magazine, Official UFO, September 1977, it talks about the Earth nuclear UFO fleet, and it says that UFOs have been around a long time, but never so much as since World War II. There have never been so many in the sky, and that they think that after the atomic bomb explosion in 1945, there began to be a large number of these UFOs seen. And it goes into, since the 40s, they have given evidence of being very highly radioactive. And it explains that there's reason to believe that they cool off, they're very hot, and that they are seen going into water or underwater. And it says the UFOs have a heat problem, and therefore they could stay in the Arctic and Antarctic, where temperatures are 100 degrees below zero. This is quite common, and it could explain the reports of UFO bases in northern Sweden, Finland, and Antarctica, because they would be cooling off down there. And when you think of the route of that I suggested from that one book, the UFO Nazi Secret Weapons, that Adolf Hitler went from Denmark to Norway and then down to Antarctica, and I think of Sweden as the headquarters for the Nobel family, the oil interests, and the links to the Nazis and the Tsars continuously after the Tsar was kicked out of Russia and the communists took over. Some key questions about the Nazification of the world. The first ships, the tankers that Aristotle Onassis got, came from Sweden, and then he was importing and exporting oil on these large cargo planes that remained an Argentine citizen. I think pinpointing these UFOs to the Antarctica and to Sweden and down to that area, is the Arctic and Antarctica, is very interesting. It goes into the heating of them and the nuclear reactors that could be on them and the development of them since World War II, how many billions Americans put into this. This particular article, Official UFO, as I say, it came out September 1977, and whether you believe in them or don't believe in them, you better begin to study some of the material that has come out if you really want to know some of the missing pieces of the puzzle. And I think the use of these type of UFOs and cattle mutilations is important and does link to neo-Nazi groups and spreading terror in this country. So I try to put, maybe it's too big a puzzle that I'm trying to put together, but there's certain areas on the map that I have circled and marked, and as we go into the way to do research or the way to look for certain symptoms, we'll get into those. I think studying the body politic of conspiracies is like studying science. If you want to be a doctor, you can start with general anatomy and biology and so forth, and then you can pinpoint certain areas, that, whether it's fevers or blisters or sores or types of sores, and you look for certain symptoms like temperatures and rashes and runny nose, or the body has certain symptoms for certain diseases. And I think the conspiracies aren't so broad that they encompass every single thing there is in the world, but they can be narrowed down to certain cities and places. Houston, Texas is a key one, Miami, Muscle Shoals, Alabama, Columbus, Ohio, Dayton, Ohio. There are certain cities where the Nazis were sent, the scientists were sent, the agents come from. Their particular lawyers are trained. And once we pinpoint those cities, like they're doing with cancer, they're trying to find a cure for cancer now. There's cancer houses where everybody who moves in, unrelated to each other, seems to get cancer. There's cancer neighborhoods in large areas. They've studied certain pockets of an area have cancer and others don't have it at all. So when you find it,